Now I won't sound like such a jerk, but now I'll probably sound like somebody who's pretty wild. Oh, that's all right. I was pretty wild. I wasn't at all.
What? Tell me, before, when you made the decision to come out to California, it was primarily as a way to get away from your husband got back. You said, what was your expectation of what was going to happen out here?
Well, you keep asking me that, and I keep telling you didn't know. No, I thought, well, I guess I told you my sister told me that if I came out here, you know, that she would get a place together. So I guess I thought that, you know, well, I could live with Eileen, we could live together, and that's it. But then that fell through, and I stayed with my sister-in-law, and I got a job right away, got a place to live right away, and we were in business.
Now, did you feel, in terms of your marriage, that was it, or did you think there might be something?
Well, yeah, I thought, well, maybe he'd... When I came here and married, well, I knew he'd been here because I got that check from him, and it was from California. And then when I came here, Mary said, yeah, he was here. She said, I was the one that made him send you that check. No, I didn't think he'd come back all the way out here again. I think he'd be glad to be free from everything, the responsibilities, because it was a shame. He just couldn't handle anything. Like that.
What was your
Well, I never thought much beyond today, you know, to get a job and feed the children and get them to school, and one day they'd grow up, but I didn't think about what would happen then. Never plan ahead.
Did you have any fears now taking on all of this responsibility? You now had
your
gotten an apartment. You were going to be working. The war is on.
I don't seem to feel any fear. I just as always. I just didn't think that much. And anyway, I didn't think we were going to starve or anything, because it was a time when you could get a job. That was all that counted, as long as I could get a job. And those horrible things that are going to happen, you know, we're not going to starve or anything. Something. I can always do something. I can always get a job or anything, whatever. So it was going to be all right.
Now, tell me how you set things up as you, because you said that you were looking at your decision.
Yeah.
Work. And then you finally found an apartment right nearby. And how did you get your children into the child care center and the school? Because your youngest one you put into...
Yeah,
as you said.
I don't remember, going to the school with them or anything. Maybe I didn't even go with him. But probably Grace took him, my oldest girl. But I found out that there was a place she could go in the school, so... came here because, I was working, and I just don't remember. I went to school plenty after when they were always getting in trouble at school. I was in school more than they were. But when they were going for the first time, I don't remember that I did. I guess my daughter took them. She was 12, so she was old enough to handle anything.
But one of them was in... was really preschool, more of a nursery setting.
Well, yeah, he was in kindergarten. Oh, yeah, so she very much had taken him to school.
And what was your, when you first began work, can you describe what a typical day would have been like, beginning with when you got up in the morning, getting the kids ready for school, that sort of thing?
Don't ask. I go home from work at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I got the, they were up getting ready for school, and I got them off to school. And then I guess I usually just went to bed. I was too tired, but I went to bed. And I could have slept until 11 o'clock that night when I was going to get up again, but I wasn't allowed to. They come home from school, and, you know, of course, the kids come home from school. Pandemonium. I knew they couldn't shut up, so I'd just get up, and then they'd go off to the playground. We lived right near the, oh, that was a great thing, we lived right near the playground, and I don't know, I'd slip around and do some housework, I suppose, get them some dinner, and then at night, after dinner, they'd be doing their homework and listen to the radio. That was the big thing, and we all listened to the radio. And then when I'd try to go to bed a little while before I went to work, usually in the evening. And then I'd see that they were all in bed. Know until like 20 years later. Sometimes my youngest daughter, especially, she went with a girl that lived in the house right in back of ours on the next street, you know. And then she'd come home, I'd call her, or she had to be home or whatever. Yeah, she'd come home 8 o'clock or something, go to bed, and then when everything was quiet, she'd get up and I'd go out the bedroom window and go back to that kid's house. And she'd tell that girl's mother, that girl's mother must have been awful stupid or something. She'd tell her that I said she could come back again for a while. And that woman never called me to ask me, you know, is it all right for Kathleen to be here? But anyway, she was only in that kid's house. She was only losing sleep. And so I left for work. I think at 11. I think I worked from 12 to 7. Oh, I went to work about 11 o'clock, mm-hmm. And I went on the bus.
Was that close by your house?
No, I had a walk a few blocks. I had a walk across the playground and a couple of blocks. And it was, nobody else was around in the middle of the night. Was nothing to be afraid of. It was marvelous. I just walked over there and got the bus. And then on the bus, everybody on the bus worked at Lockheed because that's where, you know, that was the bus we would take.
Was it a company bus?
No, I think it was a regular. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it wasn't the, like, well, of course it wasn't the RTD then anyway, but whatever that was. It wasn't that. There was another bus line. As the Asbury bus line that ran out there to the valley. Well, I think it was one of their buses.
Mm-hmm. But it went to the Lockheed plants.
Yeah, it went to the uh-huh. Lockheed plants.
Did you know anybody in the bus?
Well, after a while, when you didn't know anybody, you knew they were all going to the same place. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody you talked.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a boy that rode on that bus, you know, talking about minorities, and I never realized. I forgot there were any there. This boy was, his dad was in the movies. He was a black fellow. Hattie McDaniel? No, Claudia McNeil. No, it was McDaniel. Hattie McDaniel in the movies. Not his mother, his dad, I guess. So his name was McDaniel. And, he was a tennis player. You know, at Lockheed they had a lot of sports and stuff for the employees, and he was a tennis player with the tennis club. And I overheard in some conversations on that bus that he couldn't play in the tournament. And I didn't know. Well, I thought he wasn't good enough or whatever. You know, he didn't qualify. And then they were talking about it and what a shame it was. And I found out he couldn't play in that tournament because he was black. And I thought, oh, that was a shock to me. I thought, well, people got over that long ago. Little did I know. They haven't got over it yet.
What were other people's reactions to it?
And, some people didn't seem to say much of anything. You know, I guess they thought, well, why should he throw it? I don't know what they thought. But some of the girls that sat near him that knew him a little better, you know, they felt bad about it. And I think somebody tried to, I don't know what they did about it, because he worked in a different place from me, so I never saw him at the plant or anything. But from what I overheard them saying, I think they tried to do something about it. I don't know whether they did, you know, to protest and whatever. But I remember that was such a shock, because he was the nicest fellow, and he must have been a good tennis player, so... So I don't know anything about it at the plant or anything, because he was in a different place altogether.
Well, it sounds like the boss was a place then where you would encounter a lot of different kinds of people compared to, say, someone in the apartment when you were actually at work.
Oh, at work, you mean, we have a lot of different people.
Yeah, on the bus you'd get a real cross-section.
Yes,
people from all the plants.
Yeah, they were from... Yeah, there were two or three plants, I think, it stopped.
Well, let's go back to the end when you first started. You said there were like 3 days of...
Oh, yeah, that was agonizing. That was 3 days. I had to go there and take these tests. No pay. I had to, you know, go on the bus. I don't remember the test or anything. It just seemed so idiotic. It went on all day, filling out forms. And I always have a horror of filling out forms like that anyway. I never know what to say. I don't remember which lie I put.
Measure mechanical activity.
Yeah, they did, but I don't know how they did, because I know they told me that I had no mechanical ability or something. That was on it, and I should do clerical words, and that mathematics was my strong point. I don't know, because it didn't make any difference. I was a riveter anyway. That's what they needed, so. Didn't matter if you were a genius at something else, you couldn't be a writer. No, not at all, because they didn't, you know, what they needed was the river. See, I think the river, you know, they got paid at, or they got the allowances from the government or whatever they got, was depended on the number of employees and all that. So, riveters was something, you know, everybody could do that. Anybody, you know. They had no place else for you. They go, you're a riveter. So they were always hiring them. Well, but, of course, I didn't stay at that. I did have other work after.
Well, what was the...
you had to go through all kinds of... Yeah, you're complete physical. That, I guess that took another day. That was one of the days, probably. Because, you know, you'd stand in line...
What were you told about?
They didn't, they didn't, I don't remember how, they gave us some training, I'm sure, because they didn't throw us right with a rivet gun to that B-17. I hope they didn't, I'd hate to be responsible for all those fellows. And I don't remember about the training. How they trained us, but of course they did. I know they did.
But once,
I remember what it was
after
like.
After the 3 days, once you were hired, you knew you were coming in.
Yes, yeah, they just said, report to such and such, that you're a riveter.
Did you have any notion of what that meant?
No, I didn't know what it meant. I thought you threw them from 9 miles up in the air their hot, you throw them, and the guy catches them in a... Those are the only rivets I know.
Was
the only rivets I ever heard of.
Structural work,
you know, yeah. Yeah, you see them throwing the hot rivets, and they catch them in a bucket. That's the only rivets I knew about. I knew it wasn't that, but still, that was the only idea I had about rivets.
What sort of feelings did you have in terms of your
work, advance? Well, they told me, they hired me to do it. I was sure I could do it. You know, I didn't know what it was like or how to do it, but I knew they were going to tell me how and show me, so.
Your impressions of the place and the people?
Well, it was just a big, it was just a big confusion, you know, a great big huge place. And it was all cement floors and drab and dull looking, but then all these great big beautiful shiny airplanes. Well, there would be only one airplane, and then all the rest of them were the parts, the assembly line, you know. Like that plane was going out, and all those men were. It was so horrible, you know. That every war. To think of these young, beautiful young men. I think they ought to draft people over 60 or over 50, maybe. The youngest, because we're expendable, and those young fellows are not expendable. We need them. It's a terrible thing to think about. But of course, at that time, you know, we were all pepped up. You know, we'd been brainwashed and. Whatever the hell we were doing, I don't know. And that's the only impression I got. The first impression seemed to be, oh, you know, this is all so confusing. There was so much stuff going on, you know, and people working and running around like ants and everything.
How about the noise?
Pardon me?
How about the noise?
Oh, yeah, it was deafening. But, you know, you did get used to that right away. But at first, you walk in there, it's awful. Yeah, I forgot about that. It was pretty terrible.
Now, how did you get assigned to the particular crew or job that you were going to be
now,
doing?
Now, those are the things I don't remember. I don't remember the first. I remember those long days of filling out forms and all that stuff. And then going to work, I don't remember a thing. Until, you know, I was working.
What, do you recall who the other people on your crew were in your department?
Oh, no, that changed a lot, too. And, there was a girl I worked with. I got very friendly with. She was younger than me because she had small children. And then there was an older woman. Her son was a big wheel in the red cross. She told us how much money he made. I was so disgusted. I don't remember what now, but it was, you know, tens of thousands of dollars a year he made. And maybe he didn't. I mean, I don't know whether to believe her or not, but I believe that she said it, so I believe her. And I remember feeling so disgusted. I thought, all right, no more Red Cross. No more nice guy. I'm not going to give any more money to them. So, you know, you could designate where you wanted your money to go. So I always, Salvation Army or something. Well, I did give blood to the Red Cross during the war. I just thought, well, I don't care. As long as they give blood, they must give to the service people. I don't know what else they could do with it. So they must do that with it. So that's all right.
How large was the crew, would say, in your immediate crew under
like we worked on. First thing, I was working on an airplane that had wings. It had the wings. It was almost a finished plane.
So it was final assembly and installation then?
Yeah.
Where you were working?
I don't even remember what they called them now. You know, you knew every part of the plane, the name of it and everything. I don't remember them now. We worked in the forward end of the plane. That's all I can remember. And we just, somebody would tell us, a plate of metal, on it. And there'd be holes in it. Just put the rivets in there, get to it. And we just put all those rivets in, you know. We didn't know what we were doing any more than that.
Did you have any kinds of difficulties? You're pretty small.
No, I didn't have any trouble. It sounds like that rivet gun, you know, it would be kind of hard. But no, it was all right. I always see you work with a partner. The other girl went inside the plane and held the... I held a metal block of metal against the back of the rivet. And I always worked out, almost always worked outside. I never took my turn. I never took my turn in there because I had claustrophobia. And they'd always, the other girls, they were very nice, you know. They'd say, no, you go ahead, work outside. And they had to stay inside. So maybe it was easier. They'd lie down and hold the thing. It couldn't have been easy to hold that thing against the rivet gun. But,
Do you remember when you first started, how you felt about, once you riveted, say, for a day, how you felt about the work and your own skill at it?
I don't know. I didn't think much about it Well, what we just thought was, well, you know, we're doing this for, all I was doing it was for money. But nevertheless, a lot of other people said they weren't doing it for money. But we were doing this for the war effort. This was a great thing, you know. We were helping somebody. And I used to often think when I'd be putting in these rivets, you know, if I did one that wasn't good, you know, I'd feel so bad. I'd think, you know, suppose he let that go, you know. But they didn't let it go. I don't know how. Oh, we did. Whether somebody else took it out. You had to take the rivet out again. And I don't know how that was done. You had to take it out with your teeth. You're so naughty. But anyway.
You don't recall drilling it out, for instance.
No, I don't remember doing anything with it. Uh-huh. And I know I...
Well, maybe you never messed up.
Oh, well, of course. That's probably it. What else? But I used to always think of that when I put those rivets in. I'd think, well, I wouldn't think, you know, well, I'm working another hour to buy Bill a pair of shoes. I would think, some poor boy. I had a lot of nephews in the service. That's all I ever thought about it.
How did you feel physically after the end of a work day?
Well, I'd come home and tap dance to relax. I used to go home and tap dance, and I remember Kathleen, my youngest daughter, she said, Mother, don't do that. She didn't like it. She used to cry. I don't know what it was that she thought about it. I didn't find out. I'd ask her, well, why do you feel that way? She didn't know.
Did you put on tap shoes?
Oh, no. Just, you know, going around. So I got out of that habit. Believe me, I never tap danced.
When you first started riveting, do you recall, for instance, who your lead was?
Gee, now that was another thing that changed all the time. All these, I don't know why there was such a turnover. Because I don't think anybody left and went to work somewhere else or anything. I don't know what it was. I think they just moved around. And, mm-hmm. No, I can remember different lead men I had, but yeah, I don't remember too much about them. What, they, of course, what? They were all, any men that worked, they were mostly a little older, you know. Yes, they weren't, I don't remember any young men. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of times, this fellow on the bus, the black fellow, he was young. But mostly it was, the only time we had any young men around there was on the weekends. They used to hire servicemen, you know, when we were in town for the weekend, and they'd give them a job at Lockheed. They used to usually sweep the floor. So they had some money to spend when they got out on the town, which I thought was pretty nice. I suppose they get a big tax break and everything for that, but nevertheless.
What were the attitudes of the men, like the lead men, the supervisors, towards the women?
Well, most of them, I guess they thought, well, you know, this is all we have to work with, so I guess we have to make it do. And they, they kind of, there was a man, he wasn't a lead man, he was something, I don't know what he did, and he used to kind of, he was nice, he liked me, he was an older guy, older than one, but he said, he used to say things like, oh yeah, what are you, or if I got another tool or something, you know, he'd say, oh, you're going to be you're a journeyman now, and, you know, make fun of me, sort of like that, and he'd say, and,
what
you know,
did you think?
I didn't care what he said.
Well,
I didn't pay any attention to him because I thought, well, yeah, I'm as cute as I'll say, I'll buy that. But nobody ever told me I was a terrible riveter, only him, so, you
did
know.
Did you feel that you were?
No, I thought I was all right. I didn't think I'd break any records, I suppose. You know, I didn't feel towards it that, oh, you know, I'm really, this is a marvelous job, I'm really doing something. But I just thought, well, I'm doing the best I can, and I'm trying, whatever I do, it's fine. I'm doing it for the fellows in the service and everything. Like, you know, we never used to have enough, well, we never had enough to eat half the time to all my kids. But when we, you know, you couldn't have butter, and you didn't have meat, and you didn't have eggs, and you didn't have this, that, and the other. When I met a serviceman one time, and he was complaining about the food in the service, I said, well, don't you get steak, and don't you get butter, and that? And I said, well, that's why we don't have it, because they're giving it to you, and we didn't mind when they gave it to you. I thought, what are they doing with all that stuff? It's all going to those boobs down in Washington or someplace. I don't know who got it.